again, the basic elements of our Hakdama to the Melachos of Shabbos, just what's necessary to kind of relate to the Hotzah part of the Masechta specifically. So we discussed the fact that there are some unusual aspects about the Melacha and the concept of Melacha and the prohibition of Melacha on Shabbos. These include the great distance between the Torah Shebichtav and the Torah Shebaalpeh, the fact that the Torah says so little about what the Melachos of Shabbos actually are, that as far as we're concerned from the Chumash itself, we just have a prohibition not to do Melacha. And we need Chazal to tell us about 39 Melachos, and the Mishnah in Chagiga even kind of bemoans the fact that Hilchos Shabbos Kaharim Hatfulim Besiris, that the laws of Shabbos are like mountains that are hanging by hairs, that there's so much that's given so little in the actual Chumash itself, and we need the Torah Shebaal Peh to fill in so much, even just the number 39 and the identity of the 39. And as the Gemara in Chagiga there talks about the concept of Melachos Machshavos, which we also spoke about, maybe you have to find some time to review. So all of that is so not explicit in the Torah, is so sparsely discussed in the Chumash itself. Melachos Machshavos has to be derived through the Chumash, through Parshas of Vayakel, through the reference to the Mishkan, and then brought over into the context of Shabbos, and that's such a mega principle. In Hilchos Shabbos, everything is so sparsely discussed in the Chumash itself, and it's left to the Torah Shebaal Peh to fill in the details. In addition to that, there was an issue that a lot of Achronim made note of and developed in a specific way, although there was some controversy about it, that the question that prompted all this discussion was, if it's bad to do Melacha on Shabbos, how come as far as the Torah is concerned, as distinct from Dinan D'Rabbanan, but as far as the Chumash itself is concerned, the Torah doesn't seem to have a problem with having others do Melacha for you. So if you're going to have a Jew do Melacha for you, so that's going to involve all kinds of problems, because the Jew is obligated to keep Shabbos. But let's say you were going to have a non-Jew who's not obligated to keep Shabbos and is not doing anything wrong personally. So if you tell him to do a halacha for you, as far as the Torah is concerned, that seems to be permitted. And the question is, how is that all right? Why don't we say that there should be an issue of shlichus, that the person who's doing something on your behalf should have a status like shlucho shel adam kamoso, and if it's wrong for you to do it, it should be wrong for you to have others do it on your behalf. And we did spend a lot of time discussing the fact that you could raise objections to the question. You could say, in shluchas la'akum, in shluchas advar avera, and there are technical reasons why those are not fatal objections. And then still, one would have thought that the Torah should have had a problem with your having somebody else do melacha for you, even if it's somebody like a non-Jew who's not subject to the prohibition of melacha on Shabbos. So many Achronim had a chiddush here, and there was a debate about it. Not everyone accepted this. But a popular view on Achronim is that the prohibition on Shabbos of Melacha is described in the Asaras HaDibros and Parshas V'Yaschanan as Laman Yanuach, so that you should be at rest. That's what the Melacha is. That's what the prohibition is, rather. The prohibition is to violate your rest. And you should be in a state of menucha, and you should not do anything that disturbs your menucha. So that led many Achronim to say that even if you're bringing about melachos, you're connected to melachos, but you yourself are physically at rest, it doesn't matter so much. So that would include having melachos done through a non-Jew. That would include doing melachos in a time zone where Shabbos there, but you are not in a time zone of Shabbos. So if you're going to fax or send emails or call an answering machine that's in a time zone where it's Shabbos, and you yourself are in a time zone where it's not Shabbos. So some of the poskim invoked this logic to say that that should not be a problem. A number of other issues. The question of if you could do a melacha al yidei machshava, which is increasingly a scientific possibility, but it was discussed by the Mefarshim on Chumash in the context of the man. It sounds like from the Pesukim that the man had to be prepared before Shabbos, and the Mefarshim say, why should that be? If the man was given its taste through thought, you don't have to do anything. So it should be mutter to decide you want your food to be cooked on Shabbos, you want your food to be baked. If you decide in the middle of Shabbos you want your man to taste like a grilled hamburger or a baked chocolate cake, it should be mutter. And there's a whole discussion about that in that context as well. So there's a lot of literature about this issue, and then there's some debate about it. There are proofs brought in various directions. We got involved in some methodological observations. For example, a general question of if you have a Isser in the Torah, or if you have any din, let's say, have any din, and Chazal come and they add on to the din in a way that changes it. So what's more reflective of the essence of the din? The way it is before Chazal added to it? Or do we say, no, that Chazal did what they did because they understood that this was in spirit, in keeping with the spirit of the din, and therefore that actually highlights something that's relevant to the din itself. So maybe it was Mutter Min HaTorah for technical reasons, but Chazal made a prohibition because that was more reflective of the spirit of the law. Or maybe vice versa. Maybe it's actually that Chazal made the prohibition for technical reasons, but it's Mutter Min HaTorah because it's not reflective of the spirit of the law. So here you find that being argued out, that if the Torah says you're allowed to have malacha done by somebody else on your behalf, and Chazal prohibited it, so which position is more reflective of what the issue is really about? The way the Torah had it without the din d'rabbanan, and Chazal asked it for technical reasons, or the Torah permitted it for technical reasons, and Chazal came and put it back to the way it's really meant to be. So you can see it either way, and there is some debate about this. We mentioned that you also find the debate in terms of the question of Maaser Shabbos, that there's a prohibition, midrabanan, to benefit from a malacha, but the Gemara actually learns from a pasuk that it's mutter min haTorah. Hi kodesh vein maaseh kodesh, that there is no prohibition min haTorah of benefiting from the impact of the malacha, and Chazal came and prohibited it. So that gave us three possible vantage points as to what the real Ikar HaDin is about. The Din of the Torah without the Chiddush of the Pasuk, the Din of the Torah with the specific Chiddush of the Pasuk, or the Din D'Rabbanan. And you find those who take all three positions. Like, for example, the Sholem Meshech, who was one of the great poskim of several centuries ago. So the Sholem Meshech said, the fact that the Torah needs a Pasuk to tell us that Maisa Shabbos is mutter, that shows you that the default logic would have been that Maaser Shabbos is aser. In other words, it's not just about the individual, it's about malach itself being bad. And therefore, the whole yesod of the achronim is wrong. And he has a different answer to the question of why shlichus is permitted. And he said it's an issue of malachas machshavas. That when you have a shliach, so the malachas is being done by the messenger, by the agent, and the machshavas is in the head of the one who sent him, so the malachas and machshavas is split apart, so it's a technical reason why shlichus doesn't apply. But the other part of this chiddush d'achronim he didn't accept because of that specific proof. A third methodological issue we took note of is also the question of if you have a kasha, or if the Rishonim, let's say, have a kasha, and you have a yesod, and your yesod answers up the question. So is that good for you or bad for you? You say it's a good support for your position because you answered the question that the Rishonim have, you make everything make sense? Or do we say, no, it's a weakness in your position because if it was true, the Rishonim would have said it. So here you have that debate also. The question that the Nimuki Yosef asks of why are we allowed to have candles burning on Shabbos? If we say Eishav Mishim Chitza, that a fire is labeled as the action of the person who lit it, so then why don't we say that you shouldn't have candles lit on Shabbos? It's as if you're lighting them now. So the Nimuki Yosef has an answer, but he could have answered the question more easily. He could have said that you're passive right now. You can't have a prohibition of a malacha when you're passive. So does it bother us that he doesn't use this answer? Or do we say, no, that there could be other reasons why he doesn't use this answer, but the fact that this answer does help that issue, that's the support for this chiddush. So that was just a methodological observation, three different methodological observations that are all on display in this sugya. We may have mentioned, I think we may have mentioned, the question is also relevant to the issue of pikuach nefesh on Shabbos. That's the whole question. When you have pikuach nefesh on Shabbos, so we're obligated to do the malacha that's necessary for pikuach nefesh. But there was a debate in the Rishonim. Does that mean that it's essentially kutra, that there's nothing wrong with this at all, because that's what has to be done? Or do we say, no, it's the chuya, meaning that it's theoretically wrong, but that the need for pikuach nefesh outweighs it? So Sa'ad Machronim assumed that if this whole yisod is true, that it's all about the individual being at rest, and the malach itself is not bad, so then if you're allowed to do it, there's nothing left to criticize. If the pikuach nefesh means that you're allowed to do it, you have to do it, so then that by definition means it's completely okay. Because you can't say it's okay to do, but it's a bad thing, if the whole activity is all dependent on what you're doing. So all of these were examples of this discussion. And that left us with a little bit of a challenge, because you mentioned some of them did question this. And one of the main aspects to question is that there is a sense, and as we'll see, it's particularly expressed in the context of Hotzah, that this doesn't sit so well with the definition of malachas. Now, we used the example a couple times of your non-Jewish neighbor. Your non-Jewish neighbor doesn't understand what you're doing with Shemir Shabbos. And he says, you say you're not supposed to work on Shabbos, and therefore you walk a mile and a half to your synagogue when you could so easily drive, and you refuse to flick on a light switch, which is nothing. So I don't understand. You're causing yourself much more effort and exertion, and you're refusing to do things which are no exertion at all. What do you mean? You're trying to avoid work. So we've always explained, and this is in the Sfarim of great philosophically oriented Sfarim, such as Hirsch's commentary and others, that malacha on Shabbos does not mean labor in the exertion sense. It means a creative impact, and that it's not at all about exertion or about labor in the other sense of the word. So if it's really about creative impact, so then that does seem to be more about what it does to the world rather than what you're doing. So how does all of this harmonize? How does all this reconcile? So we suggested as a general principle that perhaps there's two different things here. That yes, the malacha as defined as a concept, malacha refers to impact on the world. That's what a malacha is. God created the world and took off on Shabbos, so too we do that as well. We abstain from things that create an impact on the world. But as far as the prohibition of malacha is concerned, that's about us being at rest. That's about us not doing the malachas. The prohibition on Shabbos is not about malachas happening, it's about us doing malachas. But if you have to ask, what is a malacha? So then the answer is, a malacha is defined by something that creates an impact on this world. So that could help with a couple of things. It could help harmonize these conflicting proofs and definitions. And also the fact that the Torah Shebichtav, just has this one concept of don't do malacha, and it's left to Chazal to break down the categories and tell us about the 39 different malachos. So that perhaps could be understood, that as far as the prohibition, the Torah telling us what the issue is, it's all one issue, don't do malacha. As far as what is contained within a malacha, so we need Chazal to do the very significant work of telling us how that breaks down, and indeed it does. And we also discussed the whole concept of chiluk malachos, that the Gemara has a discussion why it is that in the beginning of Parshas Vayakil, the Torah identifies one malacha specifically, and says, lo sivaru esh b'chol moshloseichem b'yom ha-Shabbos, that we should not do havara. So the Gemara raised the question, if the other malachas don't get identified, so why does Havara get singled out? parenthetically, I think we mentioned the Ramban's explanation, which is different from the Gemara. The Ramban says it's to highlight the contrast between Shabbos and Yontif. That he understands the whole idea of Ochel Nefesh on Yontif is that that type of malacha is simply not prohibited on Yontif. Yontif is different from Shabbos as far as the prohibition of malacha is concerned. That Shabbos malacha itself is prohibited, and on Yontif it's malachas avoda. It's a malacha that's for your own effort and for your own work. But if it's for your own benefit, if it's for your pleasure, and it's for your enjoyment of Yontif, so then it wouldn't really be included in that prohibition. That's how the Ramban understands that on Yontif, Ochel Nefesh is mutter, it's not included in the type of malacha that's prohibited on Yontif. But Shabbos is different, and therefore the Torah goes out of its way to emphasize the difference between Shabbos and Yontif, and takes Havara, which is an example of a malacha we do on Yontif for Ochel Nefesh, in a limited framework. And says the Torah, don't do Havar on Shabbos. You could have thought that you could do Havar on Shabbos. So comes the Pasuk and says, no, you can't do Havar or any other Ochel Nefesh activities on Shabbos. Hi.
According to Lashik, why wouldn't you see like for your food?
So you're not doing for your food if you really do on Shabbos also. Now, when Bohr is for the purposes of immediate usage, so then that's one of the heterum for Borer together with other things. So Borer happens to be... That's part of it. But once you have all the conditions in play, there are three conditions, but they all go towards this goal of allowing you to do Borer for your immediate usage. So we don't need to have a special Yontif Heter for Borer, because even with the Hilchos Shabbos, it has its own internal properties that seem to... Not necessarily, because if something fits in, you don't, even with the Ochel Nefesh, it has to conform to necessity. So, and then there's also a question of which malachas are allowed, which is a whole different discussion. And maybe other reasons why it's not relevant. But even within malachas where it is relevant, it has its own parameters. Okay, so in any event, so the Gemara raises this question, why is it that Havara is singled out? And differently from the Ramban, the Gemara has two possibilities. One possibility is not accepted at all, that Havara Lav Yatzis, that Havara maybe is to be treated as a less severe prohibition than the other Malachos, which when we turn to Hosa in a second, we'll see is a particularly ironic possibility, but that Havara, because as far as impact in the world, Havara is kind of the opposite of Hotzah, in that it's one of the most understandable malachos, at least in the straightforward usage. Maybe some of its applications are less obvious, but let's say lighting a fire. So lighting a fire is probably one of the most, when you're doing it directly in the normal visible way, so that's one of the most understandable malachos. Here you clearly are creating something new, and you're doing a very significant physical change. So that's one of the more understandable malachos. So the idea that of all malachos, Havara might not be a significant, as significant malacha, is difficult to understand. But in any event, we don't follow that view. But the other view is Havara l'chalek yatzis, which has the direct impact for purposes of karbanos, that if somebody does many different malachos in a state of shkaga, so he is obligated to bring a karban for each av malacha. That every av malacha has its own status, is considered distinct from each other, even though the Torah doesn't tell us what they are. So essentially, the way it seems like from the Tosfos Rid, a little bit later in the Masechta, almost at the end of the Masechta, that the chiddush of chiluk malachos is to create a reality where it's as if there are 39 separate psukim in the Torah that identify 39 malachos, all the while the Torah Shabbat itself doesn't do that. So again, it kind of highlights this difference that as far as the Issur malacha is concerned, maybe the Torah specifically only has it as one idea, don't disturb your rest, and then as far as what a malacha is, so we have all kinds of devices of Torah Shabbat Peh to determine that there are 39 malachos, and that the they are, as the Mishnah tells us, what their identities are, and the whole complicated story of Toldos, which is also relevant. So I'll just mention a few points about how exactly Toldos are derived. So Toldos, for the most part, are practically indistinguishable from Havos. As far as Halacha Maisa, there is little to no difference, depending on how you read the Gemara. Gemara seems to say that there is cannot no difference for our modern day era, because the differences the Gemara has seems to be related to Karbanos and Chiyuvim. So nowadays, where that's not a factor in our decisions, it doesn't seem to have any relevance. And Tolda is essentially Asur Minhat Torah, and subject to all the same severities, it would seem, as an Av, since they are subsumed, for the most part, within the headings of the individual Avos. And there are those who understand that Chazal were given the authority to label Toldos, and we saw that among the Rishonim, there are different theories. The Rishonim are usually not explicit about these theories. It's usually you need the Achronim to interpret the way the Rishonim make their decisions. But the Rishonim seem to be working off different theories as to what an Av, a Toldos, is. And to give you an example, Rashi seems to work off the theory that Malacha will generally have a tzura, a form, a maisa, and a purpose. And that if you have the purpose without that form, without that tzura, that's going to be a tolda. While you have other Rishonim who seem to have a little bit of a less precise definition, and that it could be similar to an Av in one way or another. It might have a Maisa with a different purpose, it may have a purpose, the same purpose with a different Maisa, it could share one element to the other, and not specifically identifying which one. And in the Rambam's writings, it seems like if you have an action that is very similar in purpose to an Av, even if it doesn't have the same action, it would still be called an Av. And then the difference between an Av and a Tolda might just be one of degree. Is it very similar, or is it very similar? Which is obviously a little bit hard for us to pin down exactly what would be on the list. That's why nowadays we're not adding a Tolda to the list. But as far as somehow in the time of Chazal, through one application or the other, it became relevant. And we discussed as well that there is one very possibly significant halacha l'maaseh difference, that there are those who believe that a tolda of a tolda is not something you have to worry about, or is not a mitzvah d'oraisa at least, while other Rishonim do explicitly talk about a tolda of a tolda. Or a tolda shein etzricha l'gufa might be either a very weak drabbanon or close to nothing.
What's a tolda?
So let's say you have a tolda being in action. You have a malacha that we know is one of the 39 malachas. Then you have another action, which is not one of the 39, but is similar enough to be listed as a tolda. And then let's say you have another action, which is also not on our list yet, but is similar to the tolda.
And it's not similar to the
app. Right. So let's say, or let's say, you know, it's a little bit like the Xerox machine effect, that you copy one page and the second page looks mostly like the first one, then you copy the second page and the third page looks mostly like the second one, but a little bit less like the first one. So theoretically, if you keep focusing on one attribute, that gets farther and farther away, which also, you know, it's not irrelevant that we use toldos in terms of human beings also, that when you go down in generations, so you have some type of physical characteristics that link, but they get further and further away. Right? So children look like their parents, and grandchildren look like their parents, and somewhat like their grandparents, and great-grandchildren look like their parents, and a little bit less like their great-grandparents. And there's some point to connection. The word tolda, which is used in human generations as well, it's not an irrelevant connection between the two. So however you define, the same way defining toldas is a little bit vague, so toldas and toldas is also vague, but theoretically that's a discussion. And also tolda shein etzricha l'gufa. So let's say you have a tolda that's done for a purpose other than what the tolda is generally done for, so that might be either a very weak drabbanon or a close to nothing, which could be explained based on a few theories. For example, you could say that if you define a tolda as the function, if you define a tolda, sorry, you're finally told that as the goal without the form, the purpose without the maisa, and you define a malacha sheni tzriach lagufa as the maisa without the purpose, so then you could say that a tolda sheni tzriach lagufa has neither the form or the purpose in the original av, and therefore should be mutter, or close to it. So that's a very elegant approach. So why would not everyone agree with that? So either you could say that you don't find multiple definitions of toldas and lachshins or chudufas, or you could say that it doesn't work that way, that the tolda was defined first. It's not looked at abstractly as to whether or not it's shrich lagufa, and then whether or not it exists. Once the tolda exists, it's a malacha, and then it's subject to the same rules as every other malacha. A second way you could get to this conclusion is if you believe that a tolda of a tolda is nothing, so, and you believe that a tolda shares any attribute, not a specific one, so then you could say that a malacha shen shrich lagufa is itself really a tolda. So a tolda, shein tzrich lagufa, is a tolda of a tolda, and then it goes back to the question of what is a tolda of a tolda. So it sounds like there are Rishonim, specifically the Ran, that's interpreted this way, who maintain this idea that a tolda shein tzrich lagufa is a lower level or nothing, and the Avnei Nezer objected because it sounds like from the Gemara in the beginning of Bava Kamma, the Gemara seems to say that there isn't any nafkamina really between an av and a tolda. And that the only difference is that an av was in the Mishkan and was chashiv hachti the Mishkan chashiva, and a tolda was not. So others, such as, for example, a Shechter has one of his farim like this, they're not concerned with the Avnei Nezer's objection. The Avnei Nezer, of course, being the author of the Egli Tal, a relatively recent yet classic sefer on Hilchos Shabbos, on the first 11 malachas on the Sidur of the Pas. So the Egli Tal objects based on that Gemara, and as Reshefta points out, that the Gemara doesn't have to mean that practically there's no difference, and that there can never be a difference practically. It means that by themselves, a tolda is treated like an av. But if you put all the parts together and it comes out that there actually is going to be an nafkamina, that would not contradict the Gemara in its initial formulation. All right, so that's some basic background to avos, toldos, and the nature of yisum malacha, and the definition of what a malacha is itself. And we're interested in all of that, not just because we're interested in Shabbos, but as we try to understand Hotzah specifically, it becomes particularly relevant to see to what extent it's similar and to what extent it's different from a typical malacha through this prism. And perhaps because of that, we wanted to suggest that it's actually very understandable why Maseches Shabbos starts with the malacha of Hotzah, an issue that the Rishonim deal with, and the Rishonim often deal with in the beginning of the Masechta. And we like to believe, even though it's a little bit different than what the Rishonim say, it's an alternative approach, but that the lumdus of the opening sugi of the Masechta maybe really does fundamentally tap into what the whole Masechta is about, and Hotzah could be a very good example of that. So in other words, we could perhaps envision Yudan Nazi sitting around and saying, okay, Shabbos is all about malachas. Let's start the Masechta talking about the malachas. Well, Hotzah is clearly an outlier. Hotzah has some very major questions it presents as far as the nature of a malacha, so it's a way to get us into the whole discussion, a way to allow us to ask head-on what is the structure of a malacha and the prohibitions as they relate to it. So with that in mind, so now we will start focusing on Hotzah. We have a few minutes left today, we'll go into more of it tomorrow, but just as far as it connects to this general introduction and our themes. So Hotzah, the Rishonim have an issue in general. That the Rishonim say, and they seem to, some of them use this phrase, many of them use this phrase, some of them don't use this phrase, but are sort of clearly saying the same kind of thing, that there is basically an inferiority complex imposed onto Chotzah by pretty much all the Rishonim. Some of them independently, some of them together with others, but they all seem to get to this idea that Chotzah is a malacha gerua. Chotzah is somehow inferior. Now, again, some use that phrase, some don't. Some mean it one way, some mean it another way. We'll talk about that a little bit. But that they all seem to tap into the fact that either as a havmina or as a maskana, and there may be a significant difference between the two, there's something lacking in Chotzah. And they talk about it because they want to discuss why the Masechta opens up with that. Or they want to answer why the Masechta opens up with that. And we noticed especially that it's in contrast to the Mishnah in Daf Ayin Gimel, which lists all the malachos. And there, Chotzah not only is not first, but it's last. And last could have made sense if there was some reason for it to be last, because something has to be last. But we don't see any real obvious reason why Chotzah should be last. Maybe there's a reason why Makapatish should have been last, and second to last. Makapatish, as we've noted, might be a outlier as far as malacha is concerned. It may be kind of a catch-all malacha. And this is actually a good opportunity also to note the Chiddush of Rav Asher Weiss, which also highlights the issue with Chotzah, that Rav Asher Weiss, in discussing electricity, has taken the position that electricity is Mr. Daraisa, while many poskim did not feel that way, or felt that way for different reasons. And he focuses on Yerushalmi, that Yerushalmi says that Yochanan Reish Lakish, we learned Tocha Shabbos for 18 months, it's longer than we're doing it, and that they discovered 39 toldos for every av, and whatever they couldn't put in one of the other categories, they put in Makavipatish. So you say, what do you mean they put in Makavipatish? You could say that if it's not comparable to any of the other categories, then it's Mutter. Why should you call it Makavipatish? So he understands that what they were saying is that anything that's Atikun, anything that changes the world, is presumably a malacha. And if we can figure out which of the 38 categories it matches, then that's where it's going to go. But if it doesn't match any one of those, then it goes into Makavipatish. So based on that premise, he says electricity is Daraisa, but it highlights what seems to be the problem with Chotzah, that intuitively, before we see any specific Rishonim, intuitively, we seem to have that issue with Chotzah. And where I started before, the question of why the Milchad Masechta starts with it, and when it really could very much not start with it. Also, the Rishonim were discussing why we have extra Makoros for Chotzah. That all the other malachas, as we've been saying till now, don't have any individualized psukim. And Chotzah has actually two. It's a pasuk that's quoted in Hazorik, Havayikale Ha'ami Lahavi. And then there is the implication of Gemara Masechta's Erevin, of the pasuk Al Yetze Ish Mimkomo. Maybe it should be read Al Yotzi Ish Mimkomo. So there's actually two possible psukim for a malacha here when the other malachas don't get any of their own psukim. And here again, the Rishonim say, well, malacha gerua, it needs a little bit more explanation. So what seems to bother us is that all the other malachos actually do something, and the malacha of Chotzah doesn't seem to really have any impact on the world. Doesn't seem to actually do anything. So that being the case, it's surprising that it's a malacha. And it's surprising that it gets on the list at all. And it's in contrast with this point about Rashi Weiss's point about Makavipatish and about Tikkun being a malacha, that he's saying even stronger that not only that all the other malachos have a Tikkun component, but that tikkun is the first thing. Once it's a tikkun, it becomes malacha, and we'll figure out later which malacha it is. Which is an even more striking contrast to Chotzah, which doesn't seem to have any tikkun associated with it. And among the Rishonim, we kind of have to go to the Or Zeruah to get a very explicit statement to this, even though the Meiri says something along these lines, but really the Or Zeruah has become the most explicit statement, the most quoted statement. We'll discuss a little later in a different context. There is a Ritva and a different Masechta that's pretty fairish about this as well. But the Or Zeruah really gets the credit for expressing it. That Meikara Chefetz Vahashta Chefetz. That when you picked it up, it was a thing. And when you put it down, it was a thing. In other words, nothing changed in between picking it up and putting it down. So therefore, why is this a Malach at all? How does this become a Malach? So that's what seems to be on all of our minds. But when we look at the more commonly looked at Rishonim, such as Tosfos and the Rashba and the Ramban, so we see they're actually focused on different issues. And they bring up different concerns. And their concerns, at least the way they're expressing it, seem to be more about irregularities or inconsistencies that show up in the prohibition of Hotzah. So Tosfos says that Hotzah seems to be arbitrary, because why is it such a big deal if you take something from a Rishus HaYachid to a Rishus HaRabim, you take something from inside and you take it outside, that's terrible. But you go from Rishus HaYachid to a different Rishus HaYachid, inside to a different inside, all of a sudden that's not so terrible. What's the difference? It seems arbitrary. And the way the Rashba and Ramban have it, maybe they're saying even more than that, that it's simply arbitrary, but that it's counterintuitive. Because if I'm going to take this table and lift it up and move it from one corner of the room to the other, I would not be violating Hotzah at all. While if I took a piece of paper and carried it outside, I'd be violating Hotzah. So not only is it arbitrary, it sounds like he's saying, but it's the opposite of what you think. You think that lifting this big desk is the malacha, regardless of inside or outside. And the light piece of paper, who cares, even if it's going outside, what's the issue? So many Achronim have a common observation about Tosfos versus the Rashba Ramban. This is what I was saying this morning, I'll explain in a little more detail. That they seem to have a dueling conception as to what the malacha of Hotzah is about. And that that's what leads them to focus on whatever component it is they're addressing. That as far as Tosfos is concerned, the issue of Hotzah is that you are changing the location of something. You are changing its rishus. Used to be an inside thing, now it's an outside thing. So you could say that, all right, so fine, I'm not supposed to change the location of something. So then the question becomes, so why is it okay to change it from one Rishus HaYachid to a different Rishus HaYachid? If the issue is changing its identity that comes through its location, so why are we drawing lines this way? Why don't we say you also can't change it from this Rishus HaYachid to a different Rishus HaYachid? While the Rashba doesn't seem to care about that so much, he's not asking about that, what seems to bother the Rashba is that he seems to see it as about what we call the schlep factor, that you're exerting yourself. And that if you're going to exert yourself from carrying, so then why should it be that if I carry the heavy desk, it's no problem, at least in the Torah, just because it's all inside, while if I carry a light thing outside with very little effort, all of a sudden that becomes terrible just because it's being carried outside. So each Rishon focused on an issue that already assumes a certain definition of what the Malacha is about. Tosfos assumes the issue is Shinui Rishus and talks about that as a problem. And the Rashba, the Ramban, assume the issue is schlepping, and they talk about that as having certain inconsistencies. And to focus on the Rashba and the Ran, the Ramban, rather for a second, we know that especially if you focus on the pasuk of Al Yotze Al Yetze, that it seems like there really is a very strong relationship between the Malacha of Hotzah and the concept of Tchumen, which is what the pasuk is literally talking about, or Al Yetze Yishim Komo. That we could say that here the Torah is talking about a specific component of Shabbos that we are concerned about the schlep factor. We don't want you carrying heavy things, and we don't want you walking too far. But both carrying and walking are both activities where we have to figure out how to define them because they're both necessary for basic functioning. But at a certain point, they become an exertion. At a certain point, they become too much. So we can't say you can't carry anything because you won't be able to lift your fork and eat dinner. And we can't say you can't walk at all. You won't be able to get out of your bed and even say Shmon Esrei Bezidus. You know, we can't prohibit all walking and all carrying. So we have a sense of when it becomes an exertion. So we'll say that walking chutz l'tchum becomes too much walking. And carrying, when you go into another rishus, it becomes a significant carrying. Maybe you could have argued that we should define it by the weight of the item. No, we define it by where you're going. When you go to a significant threshold, then that becomes too much carrying. And we noted that perhaps it's significant that in English, when we talk about exertion, we sometimes use heavy lifting as a symbolic phrase for exertion. And there is such an idea that that's what symbolizes you're working hard when you have to lift things. So perhaps there is such a notion on Shabbos you shouldn't work hard in the sense of lifting, in the sense of walking too far. So then we know within that that what emerges if we assume that these Rishonim are working somewhat within the framework of the Or HaZeruah's issue, that there doesn't seem to really be a malacha here. So then what we could say is as follows, that yes, initially, the Havmina is, it doesn't seem to be a malacha. It doesn't seem like there is a tikkun. But we have the Chiddush of Hotzah that tells us, nonetheless, we have Psukim that tell us there is a prohibition of Hotzah and Shabbos. So what's the maskana? Is the maskana that you didn't think this was a normal malacha, but now we have Psukim to teach us that it is a malacha? Or do we say that, no, you didn't think this was a malacha, and the maskan, it's still not a malacha, but it's prohibited on Shabbos with the same kind of rules anyway. And that that might be a difference between Tosfos and Rashba Ramban. Because according to Tosfos, you didn't think this was a malacha, you didn't think this was a tikkun, because you didn't think location was significant. But the Chiddush is, it is. The Chiddush is that location is significant, and therefore this is considered to be a malacha. While according to the other approach, the schlep factor, we still haven't identified any change in the environment. We're introducing a whole other track here in Hilchos Shabbos. We're saying that when you told your neighbor that malachos is not about labor, it's not about exertion, that was actually true about 38 malachos. But there are 38 malachos that are about creative impact. And then there's another one that's a whole different track, and Taka is about exertion, or is about at least conceptual exertion. So that would be a significant difference. What's the end of the story? According to Tosfos, and that's why I'm saying this morning I explained in more detail, so Tosfos doesn't say any of this. We're imposing it really on two. All Tosfos says is, how come you can't go to Rosh Hashanah but you can't go to Rosh Hashanah? And we're imposing two levels of understanding on top of that. One, where all the Achronim know that the premise seems to be that the Isser is about Shinui Rishos. And a further observation that if that's what it really is about, then that is essentially a standard malacha. It's just one that we would not have appreciated without Pesukim telling us that Rishos is significant and contributes to its identity. And the Rashba doesn't say anything about schlepping, just ask the question. But the Achronim put on the understanding of the schlep factor, and then we took that to the next step to say, if that's really what it's about, then it remains, even the Maskana, distinct from all the other malachos, and perhaps that's why you could say that it's not a real malacha even after we have its own makaros.
But still
asr. But still asr. Asr and still chizkilo, still the whole story, but it's not following the rules of malacha.
I remember we discussed this before then, but just what's the response then to why it's in the Mishnah?
Because it's still something that's prohibited on Shabbos, and they're all the same rules.
But it's just another talking about the malacha, though.
Yeah, well, you can call it, right, so you have to use different terminology.
It's allowed.
But, you know, it's allowed with skilos, so, you know, it's not allowed in the sense of it being a less severe prohibition. It's its own track. It's basically two tracks of what we call malachas on Shabbos. There's the 38 malachas, which are creative acts, and there is the one other malacha, which is not about creativity, but it's more about the schlep factor. Jonathan?
But even if you want to say it like that, you can't escape the first line of the Mishnah, which is Arbeim Chasarachos.
Correct, right. So at the end of the day, we put them all together, and we take the two types of malachos, and we make 39 malachos. It's clear that the Rishon will save a favor, so it's not a malacha. Even the Maskana, we have to, that's what they mean. They mean that it's still definitionally distinct from all the other malachos and has a whole different understanding to it.
Are we saying that Tosfos could fit into the Orza Ruah creative acting, and it's a chiddush that changing Rishus is also a creative act?
Well, what we want to say is that we'll put them all over the Orza Ruah. Let's take the Orza Ruah's definition as the opening question, right? And then it's going to affect what is the answer. That let's start with the Orza Ruah as the question here, and use Tosfos and the Rashbah to get the two different answers. According to Orza Ruah, this is not a standard malacha. A standard malacha is about changing something, and Hotzah doesn't change anything. Now, if that's the question, what's the answer? So according to Tosfos, no, it is about changing something. You wouldn't have noticed, you didn't think this was a change, but the chiddush of the psukim and the chiddush of this concept is this is called a change. And therefore, yes, it's a malacha, it's a malchudishtik malacha. And according to the Rashbah, just finish with that, according to the Rashbah, the answer is, you're right, it doesn't change anything. At the end of the day, you schlep yourself, you schlep as a schlep, but it doesn't change anything. And therefore, it doesn't fit the standard definition of malacha. And the Rishonim who actually say it's not a malacha are probably following that kind of approach. So I think we could use the Orza Ruah as an introduction to everybody's statement here. And just the question is, what's the conclusion of the discussion? Okay. So, just to take note also, there are some Achronim who also suggest, you can see how this fits in, you can consider how this fits in, that maybe Malacha Garua is because it only becomes a Malacha through the involvement of the individual. That every other action will be a Malacha independently, and Hotzah is unique, and that maybe, for example, the Kajibah Virav makes this observation, that the reason that Mishnah calls it Yitzios, when you could have thought it should be called Chotzalos, you're taking something out, but it's Davki Yitzios, which would mean a person exiting with something, that it's the only Malacha that is changed qualitatively by the fact that the human being is doing it as opposed to it happening. So like what we said before, that Malachos, regardless of the Isser Malacha, but a Malacha is defined as a change in the world, and that this is the only Malacha that gets its definition based on the human involvement. And Halacha L'maisa, the Kajib lover was suggesting this Chiddush because he wanted to discuss so why is it that people have, we mentioned in general, in a couple of contexts, that he always comes to be Melamed Zchus on Klal Yisrael. So he's discussing why is it that you really shouldn't have your children doing Halacha for you. So why is it that people seem to be Megal in his observation to allow children to carry, and there we have. So he wanted to suggest that if this malacha is particularly defined by the human involvement, and in this case, the child is not chayiv in mitzvos yet, so that this is the one malacha where it's not really like you're asking a child to do a malacha, that the malacha itself is lacking in its definition because it doesn't have an adult Jew performing it. And there's also a reference made to the fact of Psukim in Nehemiah, Psukim in Yirmiyahu, that talk about a masui on Shabbos, a masa, about the burden, about an effort, and that it sounds like this is what Hotzah, in this other understanding, is coming to tell us. There's another track of Chilul Shabbos, which is not necessarily about creativity, but it's about a burden, and perhaps that's what Hotzah is coming to represent. And this is a good opportunity to draw from Chumash here and to add a very nice point to the Drush, that if we follow the Tosfos approach that we've been taking here, or within his approach, so this is very consistent with an observation that Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky made in his commentary to Chumash, that he notes the fact that the extra psukim that are there to teach us about Hotzah, so that comes in the context of the Mishkan. And he writes there, so it comes out that all the other malachos were taught at Mara in Parshas Bishalach, and that Hotzah waited until the Mishkan. Now why is that? And he suggested that Mara was a good time to teach about malachos in general, because Mara was a time when the water was bitter, and the wood was bitter that was thrown into it, and somehow it came out sweet anyway, because it shows God is in control of the world, and he controls physics, he can make things add up in any way that he wants. So it's an appropriate time to recognize Shabbos, which is about God as the creator of the world, and to abstain from creation. But the Jews of that time would not yet have been able to understand Hotzah, because they'd say, okay, we can't create, we can't change things, but Hotzah is not a change. Hotzah doesn't have any change associated with it. And it was only once they learned about the Mishkan, about the whole concept of Kedushas HaMakom, that there could be a very significant difference between being inside and being outside, that they were able to appreciate that Hotzah Taka is something significant, it is actually a change, and therefore this Malacha had to be taught in the context of the Mishkan. We also mentioned that Rosham Shnofal Hirsch had an idea a little bit differently, which is his eventual successor of Schwab had expanded on in his Sefer on Chumash in Breuer's, that Rav Hirsch understood this is actually the beginning of Parshas Vayakel, where he has this whole explanation on the Pasuk in Shlishi that we talk about in this year. But he suggests that all the other malachos were Zecher L'Maisa Bereishis, and Hotzah is Zecher L'Tzias Mitzrayim. And Schwab went on to say that the idealized version of Hotzah, and we'll get to this, I guess, tomorrow a little bit, that there are definitely views in Rishonim that only Hotzah is the Av here, as opposed to Hachnasa bringing something in, or as opposed to Maver Dalaramas carrying outside. It's only taking from Rosh Hashanah Yochid to Rosh Hashanah Rabin, we call Hotzah, that is the actual Av Doraisa, or Av. So, says Rav Schwab, that perhaps the symbolism is that you can only really have Kedusha Shabbos in a Rosh Hashanah Yochid. Rosh Hashanah Rabin is given over to the whole world, so you can't control what happens there, so you can't have Kedusha Shabbos in a Rosh Hashanah Rabin by definition. So therefore, the whole nature of the Malacha in its primary form is taking something from an atmosphere of Kedusha Shabbos and taking it away from that. And that's, in essence, the opposite of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Yetzias Mitzrayim is being taken out of the environment of Mitzrayim and brought in, ultimately, to the path of Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. So, therefore, you can see why Hotzah would be undoing that. That the idea of Zeich Yetzias Mitzrayim would be to respect the Yisr Hotzah, not take something out of its Kaddish environment and bring it out to its Rosh Hashanah Rabin environment. It's also interesting to put that together with a point that Kutcher Glover had made independently, that he said that Yitzia could also be understood as until you get to the new place, it's all called Yitzia, and he points out from Yitzias Mitzrayim, had sources that indicated that it was called Yitzias Mitzrayim until they got to Eretz Yisrael, because you could say it's not Yitzias Mitzrayim anymore. It's Yitzias Mitzrayim, and they left Mitzrayim, and then they're wandering around the desert for 40 years, that's called something else. So no, it's not called Yitzia until you land in the new place, which is relevant to definitions of Akira and Hanacha. So God willing, we'll have to explain that tomorrow and talk a little bit about if there are nafkaminas of this whole idea of Malacha Brua and the like. Any questions about anything that we did today? Any issues? Everybody's up to speed on this? Okay. So we'll...